We tell stories to share the human experience.
No matter what form it takes.
Actor, photographer, theatre maker, musician, whoever is trying to be heard.
We can't stop telling stories. There's no end to them.
By telling stories, we connect to each other and create a sense of community.
This is an opportunity to share stories from a talented and diverse range of individuals, in the hope it provides inspiration and knowledge.
This is a podcast about Australian storytelling in all its forms, hosted by two Australians in the arts industry.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling.
Hi, everybody.
I'm Lauren Bailey.
And I'm Nick Kane.
And thanks for listening.
Welcome to Podcast 19.
Yay.
It's a big month. It's been a month of personal growth for both of us. And we get to sit down with another storyteller for this month, Lauren. How exciting.
It is very exciting. But there's been lots of excitement this month, including but not limited to a heap of amazing shows that we have seen.
Yeah, it's been one of those months, hasn't it, where we've been able to catch a lot of shows. So Bodies Over Bitumen, we saw.
Sky Gelman, yeah. Yes. He won an award at Fringe. Winning an award at Fringe, Anne Trong, who we interviewed on the podcast recently.
Yes.
And her show No Punchline won the Circus Award.
Which you went and saw as well.
It was just, amazing. I was completely mesmerized.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It was so wonderful to see all these really strong, talented performers and women just on stage doing their stuff. It was awesome.
And conversely as well, with Sky's show, the amazing performers using the streetscape to shape their performance.
And just brilliant. The juxtaposition of humanity against the environment that we live in. And it was really interesting.
Yeah, really thought-provoking. Did you see anything else?
Yes, speaking of amazing women, I caught They Saw a Thylacine Justine Campbell and Sarah Hamilton, which had probably its fourth season now, I think, because it was originally at Melbourne Fringe last year. It's been to Adelaide and over to Wellington.
It's won a fair few awards in its time too.
Yeah, and I saw it the first performance, but this one was, you can see the work they've continued to just really solidify it, and such important theatre, so very exciting.
Oh, fantastic.
And you?
Yeah.
In Sydney.
Oh, yes.
What have you been seeing?
I love how you set me up there. I was like, what are you going to talk about? But I did. I went and saw The Wonderful World of Dissocia, which is King Collective's new work, with the wonderful, who we've had on this podcast, storyteller Dave Harrison. It was a
He directed?
Yeah, directed and had a little bit of work, had a little bit of outside guidance as well by a few different
people whose names
people and directors you will be able to find out there. But the show was fantastic. It was very experiential. They'd found this fantastic space in Sydney's central building, sort of like an abandoned floor, and you walked through and experienced this crazy world of like Lewis Carroll meets Hunter S. Thompson meets Roald Dahl.
Oh, my goodness.
It was beautiful and really, really great show, and had a lot of depth, to be honest, like a lot of crazy fun and a lot of serious...
And was that with in conjunction with The Rabble?
The Rabble, that's who I was trying to think of.
Oh, okay,
Rabble.
I saw a show that Dave was in with The Rabble at our Theatre Works, it must have been a year or so ago, that sounds like they similarly took over the space and just created a whole new world in it,
Yeah, exactly. So plenty of shows that have been happening, but I tell you what has been happening this month, which is pretty crazy. And can we have a little round of applause if you're out there? Lauren Bailey.
That we'll never hear.
We'll never hear it, but you know it's in your heart there, is a new producer / director / actor of...
Writer.
/ writer. I totally forgot about that. Any other slashies that you want to add in there?
No, that'll do.
That's enough, right? With your film, In Life Today.
Yes.
So you filmed it about a week in?
I feel like we're just a week out from the shoot.
You had some great actors too.
The actors were okay. I had this guy, what's his name? Nick.
Nick Kane.
Nick something.
Right. Yep. Nick Kane. Yep.
No, of course I had, you were in the film and so
McKinnon.
Was Andrea McKinnon.
Yes.
So I had a very star-studded cast, and the crew was amazing too.
Yes.
And I've got to say, I just want to know if everybody who's ever made a film feels the way that I feel or have felt.
Well, talk us through it. What were the feelings? You know, what did you gain out of it? Learnings, all that type of thing.
I've learned so much. I won't bore you with everything I've learned. But I literally, for everyone out there, I've directed some theatre before. I've obviously been acting for a long time, and I've done some writing and also some producing of theatre. But this mm-hmm. was a very much a new endeavour for me, producing and directing a film. And I nearly felt like every day I had to learn a new skill set to get to the next step. So storyboarding and how to talk to all my departments. And that was kind of amazing. And at each step of the process, I would learn more about the script.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, a couple of days before we shot, well, you were here, so you know, but we had a rehearsal and I think I peaked.
peaked a bit soon.
But I just had this really clear moment of, does everyone who makes a film feel this good? And I just could see everything that's brought me to, sounds very dramatic, but everything that's brought me to this moment in my life so far, all this and all the amazing family and friends I have supporting me. And I just felt like that all coalesced in me going into this. I think it was because, you know, when I'm about to act in a story, that's really exciting. A lot of it is unknown and new, but a lot of it is familiar because that's what I do. And this for me was a pretty big...
Well, this was the thing I wanted to talk about with you was, we said the idea of slashy, but, you know, a slashy
can
is...
Can we
a,
say multi-hyphenate?
Multi-hyphenate, whatever
you like. I feel
like
you've just purchased me from 7-Eleven when you say slashy.
Well, that'd be a slashy, but that's fine, whatever. Different letter. But but the idea of being a multi-hyphenate...
Thank you.
Think about the different things you had to be thinking about. As an actor, you had to be thinking about performance, amongst many other things. As a director, you then had to think about performance, but also shot. And, you know, you had obviously had a great team as far as the DOP and, and first AD and so forth. Yeah. But plus the fact that you're the writer, so then keeping that integrity in the script as you shot it, as well as, well, this is actually me producing this too, so this is my set. My time
and a shout out to Nicole Walkling,
yes.
Definition Films, who yes. is co-producing the film with me.
What a time.
And to Jake Fisher, my DOP. Amazing DP, and Jacinta Munoz, and there's a whole heap of other people.
Totally. But how did you...
And you were all amazing, so thank
all
you.
All amazing. Well done, well done. But how did you deal with that? How did you find that mixture of, I guess, everything coming together in one specific or two specific days?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. It was amazing. It was a little bit stressful. It felt kind of right and kind of really scary. But I guess once you're on a shoot and everything's going, you don't really have time to worry about those things. It's more about just dealing moment to moment with mm-hmm. what's happening. That was when I realized how important it was to have a great crew supporting me. And the other interesting thing I found about directing was that it kind of took the pressure off that I put on myself as an actor.
Mm-hmm,
I didn't have time to get in my head too much about what I was doing, particularly because it was my own film that I'd written. So that was kind of a great thing. I think it allowed me to just be in the moment as an actor and be figuring out how to be there as a director as well. Mm. And it was really interesting, and who knows, I don't know if I got it right. You know, it still needs to be edited and color graded and all of that good stuff, but I'm already amazed at the work that we did. It's fantastic. And it just makes me think, oh, what will I do the next time I'm acting, directing? Like that was quite exciting to come away from it feeling that way.
Yeah,
so I was going to say someone who can probably speak more about how the direction actually went is you, Nicholas Kane, given that you were in the film. Yeah, I don't know how you...
I remember arriving on location after driving down from Sydney and... people were abuzz everywhere. There were just people just running off doing things. And you know when you get onto a set like that and there's just this beautiful sense of we're about to do something special. And I remember turning to Andrea McCannon, who was the other actor in this particular show, and just saying, wow, how good is this? You know, because it does. It motivates you when you see so many people going towards a common goal. It really, there's something special going on here.
It was a complete buzz. I don't think I was prepared for how that would feel. So.
And it was amazing. We sat down with you after everyone left and just said, how amazing is this that you've pulled this together? So well done.
I don't know. But yeah, so I just shout out to everyone in the world. That's kind of how I feel. So grateful.
It's a bit broad, but I know what you mean.
But you've had a lot of other stuff going on this month, Nick. It's when you talk about personal growth and journeys, talk to me about that.
It's been a surprising one, actually, because I spoke to, well, I spoke to you and the listeners last time we did this podcast, and I did say that I was going through a bit of an exploration phase. You might have remembered I used the Chris Hadfield reference, the astronaut, in regards to exploring, you know, this next stage of my life. I ended up going on a retreat for the first week. I was expecting a big metaphysical change, right? Yeah. I was expecting to go into this and going, right, I feel like there's going to be some big, bold changes in my life. And what actually happened during the week was I started to realize what I needed.
And?
To clear my mind, relax my body, get myself healthy again, to allow myself to look at the next 6 to 12 months. And it was funny at the retreat, you know, it's this idea of emotional contagion, and it's why you go to these things. Emotional contagion is you smile at someone, they smile back at you, and the energy of that creates this emotional contagion, which is why retreats are so lovely and people start having all these amazing, epiphanies, is because when you're around other people, this emotional contagion idea kicks in, you know, scientifically proven too. But what happened with me was I wasn't having any of these epiphanies. I was just really content in stopping my mind, or slowing my mind. You can never stop your mind. Slowing your mind and just enjoying relaxing.
Yeah.
And it just got me ready for the rest of my trip, which was then going to your wonderful film, and then going to see family and friends. So it's funny how your body just knows exactly what it wants.
Isn't that true?
Yeah. Like, you can intellectualize it as much as you want, but at the end of the day, I just knew in my gut, this is what I need to do. Just slow down and relax. So it was really
fantastic.
Beautiful.
And you're almost, you're on your way back to Sydney in the next few days too.
Yeah. So this is the end of my month of exploration. So it's exciting times, and it's much of the same. And I think I share quite a bit on this podcast about what I'm all about, so I won't go into that detail. But it is exciting, and I feel reinvigorated for the next 6 months.
Well, talking about this idea of, you know, how we deal with the things in our life at the moment and look forward and everything, I think that's probably a great time for us to get stuck into our interview with the very fantastic Shash Lal, and hear what he has to say about all of that.
Enjoy.
So we are here this morning sipping lattes with the lovely Shash Lal in his inner city apartment.
It's very trendy as we sip the lattes, Shash.
Yes, this I feel very Melbourne.
Yeah. Welcome, first of all.
Thank you.
We are in your apartment. Can you tell us a little bit why we're in your apartment today and why you chose this as your location?
Well, this is the space that I always work in, and I love, I mean, obviously no one else can see it, but you guys can. There's this the view of the city, and It's great to be part of the life that's going on outside.
Well, that's it. And you'll cover a bit in your story about where you actually grew up, but I imagine this will remind you a little bit of home as well.
Yes, it does.
Being in the city.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a very urban boy.
Yes.
And so for me, being in the midst of everything kind of represents like how I feel about creating and life in general. I just want to be part of the pace and to, you know, take it all in.
Excellent. Well, I think that'll lead us quite nicely into the time-honoured tradition of reading your story, Shash.
Okay. I grew up in Kent, a county in the UK that borders London. I had a very comfortable upbringing, but it wasn't until I became an adult that I realised just how hard my mum and dad had worked to build that world for me, not just financially, but also emotionally. It's something that I am extremely grateful for. My parents loved to travel, so I was lucky enough to see a good portion of the world by the time I went to university. With London less than an hour away and my grandparents living in the centre of the city, I was always in between the countryside and the urban sprawl of town. I went to an all-boys grammar school. I hated every moment of it. I was desperate to be creative, but there weren't any opportunities for artistic measures in that environment. And coupled with the bullies, it wasn't a pleasant time, and I became extremely quiet and withdrawn. When I was 15 years old, my mum asked me if I wanted to join her friend's Amdram theatre group. I won't ever forget that moment. I was so scared, but my want to create was greater than my fear, and I said yes. It was the beginning of a wonderful journey, and at 16, I made the best decision of my life. I became the first and only permanent male student at the girls' grammar school. It was like I had spent years of my life walking down a grey, cold corridor, and at the end was the most colourful utopia I'd ever seen. I studied the sciences and theatre, an odd but great combination. After university, I attended drama studio for the one-year post-grad course. And after graduation, I lived in central London, working on reception at a production house in Soho, going to auditions and creating theatre in the London Fringe. In 2010, I applied for my one-year working holiday visa for Australia. I've always loved this country, and I had a feeling that it would be a core part of my life. 8 months before my planned move, I took a trip to Australia to see my friends. On the flight to Singapore, I met my now husband, Christopher, a born and raised Melburnian. It is 5 years on, and I am still here, telling stories about the strength of diversity and hopefully shedding some light on the awesome world I have been privileged to experience.
Thanks, Shash. Thanks for sharing that.
Fantastic. And it sounds like you were lucky to have a lot of great opportunities growing up.
Yeah.
But that things were also a bit intense. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, I am incredibly lucky. Like, my mum and dad have worked very hard. My mum, now retired, but was a head teacher. And she actually ended her career by turning around schools that were in trouble. And she wrote some books. And she was very present in the education system and did a bloody good job of it. And my dad, same, born in India, came over to the UK when he was a child. You know, worked very hard, created his own business, and chartered accountant. And he and my mum, they took us around the world. My brother and I, like, we travelled the world, and you know, we saw a lot. But you know, we grew up in a Kent village, you know, just outside of London. And I was always running away to London because it's interesting when you are mixed race, you know, and living in that kind of environment. It's not the most open of places.
I wouldn't have thought.
What was it like? How big is Kent?
Yeah, can you give us an explanation in regards to, if we were in Australia, somewhere that would be similar, to give us that picture of what Kent might be like?
A lot smaller than anywhere in this country.
Right. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So it literally borders London, and it would probably, I'd say, I don't think Kent would be any much bigger than maybe Melbourne Metro and a little bit into the countryside. Like, it's not very big at all.
Right. So how many people were in Kent? Is it a suburb? Are we talking suburb?
It's like a suburb. I suppose if you were going into the Melburnian suburbs, it would be like that.
Yep.
I don't know, these are about 150,000 people maybe live in Kent.
Okay.
And it's very countryside orientated. It's called the Garden of England because it's all very pretty.
Yeah.
But back in that time, my mum and dad, when they first got together, it was very difficult. You know, it wasn't really accepted for people to be in mixed racial relationships. And they just troopered on. And I think that's one of the greatest things that I was given as a child.
That's pretty inspiring.
It is, yeah.
Because you did say that you were shut down a little bit creatively before you had the opportunity to then go to the girls' grammar school.
Yeah.
Now, what effect do you think this had once you had that opportunity to move to the girls' grammar in regards to, I guess, starting and allowing your creative storytelling to flourish?
I mean, I did feel very suppressed because, you know, I was at an all-boys grammar school, like a British all-boys grammar school, and there was no room for any kind of artistic endeavours.
Mm. And it was also really academic?
Very academic, very sporty as well.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I was forced out onto the rugby pitch in the pouring rain, all that kind of crap that one has to do. And also, you know, and I was bullied, and, you know, I was different, and they didn't really understand that. And, you know, teenage boys, it's not pleasant, is it?
No.
So I became very quiet, and I always wanted to, when I was a kid, annoyingly, I'm sure, I always wanted to go to drama school, and I was like, Mummy, Daddy, let me go. And they were like, no, must be educated. And, and then suddenly...
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I think we've all had
to
it.
To a lot of people, I think, yeah.
And then I was doing my A-levels, which is basically year 12, and I did sciences and I wanted to do theatre studies. And I'd gone to this Androm group that my mum's friend Janet had taken me to.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
my mum, because I was very quiet at this time, and my mum came into, like, I can see it clear as day, and my mum said that she was so surprised that I said yes, because she thought I'd be too quiet and scared to do it at the time. And I just remember thinking, like, my heart was pounding. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, Chaz, you really, like, you want to create, just say yes. And I just came out of my mouth. And it was the beginning of the creative journey, really.
Oh, it takes a lot of courage, man. That's pretty amazing.
It was a really exciting moment. And I remember thinking, like, oh, my God, this could actually happen. I could actually become a creative.
Yeah.
I went to this Androne group. Janet, who's one of my mum's best mates, looked after me like she was my own mum. And it was amazing. Like, it opened me up to have the guts to then say that for one of my A-levels, I wanted to do theatre studies. And you could only do that at the girls' grammar school.
Right. Yeah. So I wasn't sure if you'd moved in year eight or year nine, you know, if that was a, but it wasn't until your final year of study. Wow.
Yeah. I was 16. So in England, you do 2 years of study, your final one. So it was 16 to 18, which is prime time for, you know, a human being when they're in development.
Yeah. For life.
For life, to be free.
Totally.
And so I just asked them, I just said, can I come full time? To do all of my A-levels, and they said yes. And I remember thinking, this is going to be the best bloody choice I've ever made in my life. And it was great.
Wow. Oh, and so, the girls' grammar is in Kent?
Yes.
We're still in Kent at
this
point.
We're still in Kent, yeah.
So you're still facing issues of diversity in terms of ethnicity and heritage and that sort of...
Yeah, and also, you know, like with my sexuality as well, like at the boys' grammars, you know, in the 90s in Kent, there was really bad representation of, you know, same-sex relationship. Well, there wasn't even anything like that, you know. It was just really clichéd work. And same when it came to heritage, anything that was Indian. And it was interesting because, like, when you're mixed race, people can't seem to really understand, well, people who aren't open-minded don't really understand the concept that you are mixed race. You are like a mixture of two heritages. You're not one, you're not the other, you're both. And then you are who you are as a human being. So I always represented myself as a British man who is of mixed heritage. And so as a human being, I think I was very confusing to a lot of people. Yeah. And as such, teenage girls, they just seem to be a bit more open-minded, like at that stage of their lives. Yeah. And so it wasn't the most open of places, but it started to lend itself to be a bit more.
Yeah, it became a great platform for you to actually then, I guess, express yourself in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
yeah. I love how you mentioned that the urge to create was greater than the fear, which is such a awesome mentality, I think. And that idea obviously helped you with your A-levels.
Yeah.
Do you feel that that was something that was still a driving force with you through university and then post-graduating?
Yeah, I remember like my head of year at university saying to me that if I spent more time in the lab and less time on stage, I'd probably get better grades. Which is very true. Like I ran drama sock and...
So you completely owned it once you got there. You were like, let's do this.
I was like...
It's time.
It was time. And I don't know if I should... Oh, bugger it, he won't care. I cut this deal with my dad that, you know, like I would go to a good university and he would pay for drama school.
Great.
And then suddenly there I was going, he's the builder.
So you're a businessman early, cutting deals with your dad.
Oh, yeah. I was a producer before I knew I was one.
Totally.
Yeah,
I love it. And let's go straight into that. Let's go past university and start talking about the job that you had in the reception at a production house in Soho.
Yes.
Did you fall into this? How did you get into this particular job?
So one of my best mates who I went to drama school with, Laura, one of her best mates from school, Joe, who's now one of my closest friends as well, she was a junior producer at this production house, and Laura was helping out on reception. And then Laura, I think she got a gig or something, and she asked me if I would fill in. And I was like, why not? I have no money. I'll do that.
The greatest driving force.
Yes.
Yes.
Must buy wine. And so...
So true.
So I did, and it was smack bang in the middle... Well, it's still there. Smack bang in the middle of Soho. I was there for 5 years... It was good and bad in equal measure. It taught me a hell of a lot. And the best thing about it was that I'd have a casting and I'd be in and out within like 20 minutes. Because I'd literally walk around the corner, go to the casting house, because they're all in Soho.
Right.
And then come back again and be back at my desk answering the phone before you knew it. So it was great. It was a great experience. Yeah. And being in... And I always lived in central London. So I would walk to work every day. It was wonderful, yeah.
And it did help you on your journey as a storyteller too, because it gave you another side of the industry, so to speak, didn't it?
It did.
Started to, I guess, crop up a whole heap of opportunities for you.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do a lot of production. I did, you know, the little stuff like sourcing and stuff. But it opened up my mind to production because I was, you know, I'm hanging around with producers all the time.
Yes.
And also seeing, you know, other wonderful creatives and like seeing them on a daily basis and all these like really cool people that I looked up to would be like sat in the reception. I'd be chatting away to them. And I just realized that like production, that I did enjoy doing it. I do enjoy doing it. And it's a great way of opening up doors for yourself and for other people, and why not take control of what you're doing?
Mm. Yeah. And so was it pretty clear to you at this point, having made the change in your life in high school and university, and was it now that you're working, it's pretty clear to you acting and production, this is how I want my life to be?
Oh, from the moment I went to drama school, like when I was so scared when I went to my audition for drama school. Because it was basically the biggest leap. It was like, I'm actually going to do this. Like, I'm going to do this. Yeah. And from that, when the moment they said, yes, you've got in, that was it. That was my life. That's how it was going to be. And then with the production house in London and everything else coming together, I never would have looked back after that moment.
And it was Royal Holloway that you studied.
Royal Holloway London I went to, yeah.
Did you mention to me you were involved in some studies that were on at the time that recently
had just been published?
Yes.
Yeah, it was actually, I think it must have been about 8 or 9 years ago now. And one of the first jobs that I did as an actor was I was employed to portray an asylum seeker and all in different sections of how an asylum seeker would react with the treatment that they received, which is very progressive for in today's world where it's...
Even now, that would be quite progressive. Eight or 9 years ago.
Yeah. And it was my university, Royal Holloway, and for psychology. And so I spent the whole day in this room in central London in one of the buildings portraying this asylum seeker in all these different manners. And the papers have only just been released. And, it's now out there. And I didn't realise at the time how important it was to do a job like that. I mean, not just because of the fact I wanted to get paid as an actor, but also what that gives for other learning opportunities and to support.
So that sounds like it was a real important moment in, I guess, your voice as a storyteller too, and the bits that started to add together to create your voice.
Yeah.
When you were in London at this point too, you were obviously doing a fair few fringe shows.
Yeah.
Is there any that stick out in your mind as something that you'd like to share, or any experiences from that that you'd like to share? Good.
One of the most important plays that I ever did was a play by Dawn King called Water Sculptures. Uh-huh. It's three-hander on stage. Actually, one of her plays was on in Melbourne with Red Stitch. They did one of her plays. And this play just kept having life. It kept going from venues, and we took it into Europe, and it is an incredible play, and it was an incredible character. And I remember Dawn saying to me, because I was just doing another one of her plays, and we were at the Union Theatre in London, beautiful theatre, and we were all sat having a drink after the show, and Tom, who is the creative director of Upstart Theatre, who is doing these plays, said to Dawn, he was like, oh, we need to find someone to play Kumar in Water Sculptures. And I was sat right there, and then I just remember him looking at me going, oh my God, Shash can play Kumar. And I was like, I'll play Kumar. And then I was like, why is he called Kumar? And Dawn said to me, oh, I had to finish the play. I had to find a name of a character, and I was working with a guy called Kumar, so I just called him Kumar. And I was like, so there's no, you know, I don't have to be stereotypical or anything. And she was like, no, it's just this artist. And it was the first time that I was like, oh, awesome. I get to play a human being for being a human being with some form of diversity, but it not actually having to be about their stereotype.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Because you have done quite a bit of work. There's quite a few credits on IMDb, and I noticed that you've played a lot of doctors and sort of more stereotypical roles. And that made me think, you know, has that been a...
Yeah, I played a cab driver once on a TV show here, and that was really the pinnacle point of the stereotype.
Do you feel like the stuff you're going out for now is really still pigeonholed like that, or that you have more breadth, or is it more so in theatre than film? And
the truth is that my agents, it was another point of my career when I changed agents, and I love my agents so much, which I know is like, and I have a really good relationship with them, And we were in the initial meeting, and Danny, one of my managers, said, just so you know, we're not signing this outside stereotype shell. We're signing your creative energy.
Oh,
we
fantastic.
Love you as a creative. I was literally like, give me the contract.
Where do I sign?
Fantastic.
And they have stood by that the whole time I've been signed with them.
That's great.
You know, they have said no to stereotypical roles.
Yeah.
They have pushed me for some of the most amazing opportunities that I don't think normally I would get if I didn't have two agents who would push for me like that.
Yeah.
And now that's very firm in the way that I want to create. If a character is of a different nationality and they're being represented in the right way, then wonderful. Playing different characters is great, but I don't want to represent the stereotype anymore. I think we're beyond that these days.
Yeah. let's talk about coming to Australia. And it sounds like there have been a whole heap of wonderful things that have come out of your move here.
Yeah.
Not least of which is meeting and marrying your husband, Christopher.
Yes.
And you mentioned in your story your love for Australia.
Yeah.
However, a big move like that, it's not something you do lightly.
No.
Talk to us about the decision to make the big move and come over here.
It's funny, I was talking about, I wrote a Facebook status update the other day about this because I've only just got my citizenship.
And oh, congratulations.
Thank you. It's one, two passports, yay. when I was at the boys' grammar, I had this horrible teacher who I won't name, and I had Australian, like little Australian things all over my exercise books. Because Australia is very present in the United Kingdom, more than I think Australians think. I mean, there's a lot of Australian drama, and not just neighbours. There's like all this Australian drama.
That's
exciting to hear.
Yeah, it's great. And he said to me, why do you have these on your exercise books? And I was like, really? I don't know, but it just means something to me. And he was like, take it off. And I was like, no.
Oh my goodness.
I want to keep it. Yeah. And when I was 17, we went to go and stay with my auntie and uncle in Singapore. And then we went to Indonesia. And I remember my mum saying to me, like, darling, I know we're so close to Australia, but we just couldn't get the time in to go.
Wow.
And I was like, God, you heard, like, oh, Australia.
Wow.
And then I had all these Aussie mates in London. And then I came out to visit my mates here. And we did, you know, Melbourne and Sydney. And then I had about a year and a half left of my 1 year working holiday visa. And I was very involved in London life. And it was a good choice to leave that bubble for a little while because can become quite the bubble. We do think it is the center of the universe sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's good to see outside of that. I applied for the 1 year working holiday visa. And then I popped over to see my mates about 8 months before that. And on the flight to Singapore, I met Christopher.
Wow.
So, and
it, meant to be, like starting a new life. This is what it's about.
Yeah,
right?
Totally meant to be.
Yeah.
And one of my best mates here, who's Melburnian, who I'd come to visit, like went to university with my sister-in-law. So, like, you know, stuff is connected, like, all over.
Yeah.
Which is another huge part of using creating.
And what sort of ideas did you have about what the industry might be like when you got here?
Yeah.
I didn't really have any idea, which is why also in that first initial trip, the one where I met Chris, I started doing some networking. So I wanted to send out my information and sort of said, you know, to casting directors, what do you think? What opportunities are there here? And the truth was that I was pretty unique, I think, when I first got here.
Mm.
And coming from London, which is flooded with...
You're still unique, Shash.
Oh.
You know, you walk into a casting in London and there are 50 people who look just like you. And, you know, when you're mixed race, you don't think that it's going to be that flooded. But it is. And then coming here is a bit more unique.
Different.
And it was a good starting point. But in terms of the actual energy, I mean, Sydney's a little bit more different, I think. But with Melbourne especially, it's totally relaxed. I went into my first casting in this country. I remember thinking, where the fuck is everybody? And then
That's the way we like it, Shash. Yeah. It's not too many people.
Keep it chill.
1 out of 5 is better than 1 out of 50, right?
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah. And I remember I walked in and whoever was on reception was like, oh, good day, how are you going? And I was like, oh, I'm very good, you're talking to me. I thought, normally you just get a number slapped on you and then you have to walk into a room, do your thing and get the hell out. And I was like, this is wonderful. And it's certainly something that I've taken back to London with me, actually.
Oh, right. And it's obviously working. Like, you like being in the room because there's a few roles that you've got while you've been over here too. I'm just looking at some of the credits that you've got. You've got Wentworth, you've got Nowhere Boys, yeah. Mr. and Mrs. Murder, yeah. TV series.
Yeah. Neighbours,
Neighbours as yes. well, which would yes. be like the Holy Grail for a Londoner.
And you know what? I've always got stories. So when I was a little kid, my dad said to me, this is very posh, my dad.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, I want to be an actor. And he was like, what do you want to be on? And I was like, I want to be on Neighbours. And so when I got on Neighbours, I was like, this is amazing. Yeah.
What's my next goal?
Yeah, we're going to go for next. TV's been good to me here. Yep. It's, apart from the Nowhere Boys, which was a good solid day on set, I'm not sure that I've had the opportunity to play what I'd really love to play, but I mean, all actors feel that way.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons of why taking control with something like production is really helpful.
Yeah.
Which is totally the next part of my question here. In regards to your work here, because you have been a part of fringe shows both in Melbourne and also in London. Yeah. So what I found really interesting about that is maybe just getting a bit of a view or a comparison on the two and the differences. And, you know, if there is an Aussie that wants to take a show over to London, why would they do that? Or is Melbourne Fringe better? Like, just a few comparisons that you can draw from your experience.
Yeah, sure. The great thing about Melbourne Fringe is that it is a condensed environment. So networking and putting your... I mean, there's, as I say, Dawn's play was over here in Melbourne, you know, and it's a great city to put your show out. In London, it can get lost. Because there's a lot going on.
Uh-huh.
You've got to really push it hard. But let's be honest, it's London City. I mean, you know, if you've got a play, you've got something artistic and you want to show it, London's one of the best places in the world to do that in order to get a platform. So, you know, for any Aussies who want to go to London, be brave and give it a go. It's definitely worth it. But in terms of how they actually function and work, I mean, it has been a while since I've done a fringe play. But
any sort of fringe independent
theatre. Mm-hmm.
To be honest, it's pretty similar. You know, you get a bunch of creatives who really feel passionate about something, and they make it happen.
Mm. Yeah, and so talking about creating one's own content.
Yes.
Segue.
Yes, very nice.
You, of course, are deep in the midst of, I guess, pre-production on an amazing project that you and Andrea McKinnon are getting off the ground. What can you tell us about the show without obviously
giving away too much?
Giving it all away.
So it's called Four Seasons in One Day, and Andrea McKinnon and I, amazing creative. She and I co-created and are co-producing it. And it was born out of a lot of our conversations about the representation and stereotyping and really just how sick to death we are of it. So we came up with the concept of creating short films that were cast on an actor's energy as opposed to any form of their gender or sexuality or colour, and then crewing up with great creatives, not just ones that have had their opportunities, but getting other people involved and working with people of... who have had great careers, long careers, and getting in new creators to work together to help one another. And then we realized that basically it was easier for us to create an art installation so we could combine everything. So we've taken an audio narration, which would be accessed on smartphone. It links into the four short films. And it takes you around the Melbourne CBD amongst the free tram zones.
So when we're talking about art installation, you mean Melbourne is the...
Yeah, installation.
The location. Yeah, yeah, great.
Melbourne is the stage.
Yeah. Basically, Melbourne is the stage. Yeah. And so it will be three elements, the geographic location of the city where you are, which will be linked into the audio narration, which will also be linked into the film that you've either just seen or will be going in to see.
Wow.
You can watch all films in any order, and it will give you another insight into what's happening. So we've just finished the last application for funding. We've got a pool of wonderful actors. We've got our four directors all signed on. And it's a really exciting opportunity, I think, for everybody, not just in Melbourne, but in Australia. And also a great platform because it will be online after the installation date. Fantastic. So it can go global.
There is so much in this. How long have you been working on this so far? Because it sounds like you're a little way down the road.
Oh, I'd say Andy and I have put in a good 6 months of it so far.
Yeah.
From the beginning of creation.
Even for 6 months, that sounds like...
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Andy is an audio producer, which is a wonderful trait to have. I mean, I'm a producer as well, but she's an audio producer and I don't know how to do that, and she does. And as a team, we work incredibly well together because we do lend each other the strengths that we need and we support one another. But I think the most important thing is that, you know, she and I are very good friends as well. We were incredibly passionate about this. You know, we are passionate about representing human beings the way they should be represented. And because of that, it's driven us to work towards this goal to make this happen.
It's a beautiful little segue again into, I think, what is your voice as a storyteller? Do you have a really strong concept of what that is?
I didn't for a very long time, to be honest, because of entering into the industry and not really understanding, having to learn the basics of what was happening. I didn't really think about that. But probably about 2 or 3 years ago, I started to realise that to have a voice is very important. Mm. And now I feel very grateful to have an opportunity where I can have a voice and say something. And so for me, I suppose it's to represent, I want to honour what my mum and dad have done, what my grandparents have done, you know, what other people, or other human beings have done, to be brave to create a world with compassion and understanding. And I want to add to that.
Isn't that lovely? And I really love this idea of if you can make your voice something that you really are passionate about and want to honour, it then makes the art something so much more than just stepping on a stage or, you know, representing a script in the right way. It actually comes from a place within you deep down, this little flame, which then comes out in the way that you produce, the way that you act, the way that you do everything. So I think making a goal like that is so beautiful because people can get around that and they understand it.
Yeah.
Someone, I won't mention the name, but I was speaking to someone recently who told me that the reason, there's three reasons actors are actors. The three reasons are look at me, look at me, look at me. And
I imagine so how you reacted to
I
that.
I disagreed vehemently with that. And it's just, I love it when you meet with people and you're talking to someone and they say something that resonates with you really deeply about why you do what you do. And I think Nick and I have a pretty keen understanding of why we're doing what we're doing and what we want to do with the podcast. And it's just really special to me to hear you say that about your voice as a storyteller and why it's important. And I think there should be more opportunities for us all to share that stuff and grow from that energy. It just makes me think about, you said in the bookends for this podcast, Nick, that idea of emotional contagion,
yes.
I think it was.
Yeah. So this idea that energy is shared between people. So if I smile at you, Sash, you automatically smile back. Yeah. And what happens is you can create that energy in many different ways. And so artists getting together create something special because of the emotional contagion in the room lifts everyone.
Yes.
And that you all feed off each other and it immediately actually makes humanity better.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I always, as a human being, I remember the first point was when I was at university and I was walking back from the union and there were two guys behind me who were going, oh, faggots. And this is at university. And I was like, come on now.
Yeah.
So I turned around and I just said, hey, look, that's pretty offensive. And let's have a little conversation about that.
Yeah.
And they were like, I remember one of them saying to me like, oh, typical, over-emotional. And I was like, no, we're just going to have a chat about it. We were talking for about an hour, and when they left, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning as well. And when they left, they shook my hand and they said, we'll never think the same way ever again. Wow. And I remember thinking at that point of my life, I have to say things, like we have to say it with understanding and compassion and allow people to be educated to realize that human beings are human beings and we should look after each other and we should help one another. And if that means that I have to stay calm and say something, then I will if it will make it better in the long run.
And I think the way that you said it was in an authentic way that wasn't pushing anything on them too. You had a adult discussion, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that idea of not pushing things
sharing
on people,
rather
but
than
sharing.
Enforcing.
Yes, exactly.
And that's actually how I create my art, because the stuff that I've written, it's a story of human beings, all of you know, genders and sexualities and colors, being human beings, because that's how I want to represent life, because that is actually how life is.
Yes.
And you have done quite a bit of writing, haven't you? Have you written a feature film?
Yeah, I've written. Well, I'm on the second feature at the moment, which I can't actually talk about it because I haven't even finished it yet. Yeah.
So on the podcast, we talk a lot about the challenges that artists can face, both externally from the industry and also internally in terms of fear and self-sabotage and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What do you think your biggest challenge as an artist has been so far?
Overcoming the stereotyping has been the biggest challenge as an artist within industry. As me and as an artist, my personal challenges would have to be overcoming the fear of being rejected, which is something that we all... I mean, these are very obvious ones, but they are true to me as well. You know, it's something that I've realised that with a lot of my friends who have left the industry... they were very honest and brave about it and just basically said, I don't want to have to live like that. For those of us who are driven to remain, we learn how to cope with that rejection. We learn how to cope with the uphill fight, and it becomes part of the journey. And when it's part of the journey, it makes it even more worthwhile in the end.
That's, yeah, so good. So... what I want to do, because I think we've covered a little bit about good storytelling already and what drives that. I just am interested to know, as far as storytellers, are there any in particular that drive you or that you're inspired by that you can call out now and let us know why?
I worked with Dee McLaughlin at the Picture Tank, and she was one of the most inspiring directors I've ever worked with.
Dee's fantastic.
Yeah. Very actor... driven and open, this wonderful calm, and Andrea Buck as well at the Picture Tank, both of them as a team, amazing. And they work very hard to also create art that represents something important to other people. And also, I have to say, working on water sculptures and working with Tom Mansfield at Upstart Theatre all those years ago, and working on Dawn King's plays, which are amazing, to be surrounded by these really driven creative, really intelligent driven creatives, it has had a huge impact on me.
Yeah. I did say one, Shash, but that's 50, so that's fantastic.
And can I just add in a quick shout out to Deep? She runs these awesome classes that are on actual camera technique as an actor.
Mm.
And when I took part in one of the workshops, I was like, this is amazing. This is the kind of thing that you only ever get to learn in practice on set.
Yeah.
And if you don't get the opportunity to be on set as much as you like, you don't get to learn that stuff until it matters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we might put a link up for that, because those workshops are gold.
Yo, yeah. I mean, she really knows how to deliver on a set.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I think that brings us to the very last question of the interview. And this is a little bit of fun, so please don't take this too seriously. But this is just a little question we do for everyone.
All right.
Changes, of course, but this one's your specific one.
Okay.
This is in the essence of the discussion we've had around pitching and getting a project off the ground.
Yeah.
If you were sitting in an elevator and
or a standing.
Production...
Or standing. I mean, you can sit down if you're tired.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fine.
It's been a long day. I'm just going to take a little...
You can stand or sit. It's up to you. And in walks a production exec who has the key to funding for your next project. But the project that you have is about your life.
Right.
How would you pitch your life to that production exec? An elevator pitch, basically.
An elevator pitch.
Wow. Talk, like,
yeah, sit down if you need to.
So, it's actually the feature film that I wrote is basically this.
So you're ready to go.
Diversity is one of the strongest elements of human life, and we need to spend more time looking and appreciating and learning from one another. I am a very diverse human being in myself. I am very proud of all the elements that make up who I am because of the brave work that's gone in from the other people around me in order to give me these opportunities. This in itself creates a very colourful story here is my story, let's tell it.
Oh, wow.
And just like, how much money do you want?
Yeah. We've got our checkbook here.
Yeah. Oh, excellent.
Is that right now?
20 to 30 mil. Yeah. Wow. There's some, you know, there's some CG in there we need to do. So.
Well, if you need any help with that film, you just let us know.
Yeah. Indeed.
That's not money. Thank you so much for sitting down with us this morning, Shash.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It has been delightful.
Yeah, really delightful.
It's been lovely. Thank you, guys.
Lauren, what was your takeouts?
Oh my goodness. There are a lot of things I loved about that interview. Something that kept coming up in my mind was the way that Shash talks about energy of people and how his agents are casting him on his creative energy rather than through stereotypes and that's how he wants to work. More and more, I realize the decisions I make are based on intuition, and I think intuition is about the connection of energy, right?
Yeah.
And I don't even know where to go from there. But just that idea, maybe next month I'll have something more useful to say about it. But
I think, no, it's a great point, because I was actually going to cover off this idea of mindset, which links quite beautifully to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And there was the discussion around those of us still left in the industry and the way that we've managed to integrate this idea of rejection, this idea of the lifestyle into what we're doing and into the part of our journey.
And now it's just part of the journey.
Which that mindset really does help to fill the well in regards to, you know, I guess that sense of who you are and energy you put out.
And in that context, he was talking about the drive to remain.
Yes.
Something in my life at the moment, whenever I hear someone describe something as hard, I try to replace the word.
Mm.
And I most often hear the word hard used in context to what I'm trying to do or what other creatives are trying to do. Oh, it's so hard.
Yep.
And so it's really nice to hear him talk about rejection and the will to continue, but in the context of being driven to remain rather than, oh, it's hard, so you've got to stick at it. Or I think that's a really positive way to view it.
Yeah, positive shift.
Yes! So what awesome recommendations do you have up your sleeve for us this month, Nick?
I'm going to get a little tech here. Ooh. I've got an app that I'd like to recommend, first of all. And you know what? People might actually know this app and have heard of it before, but I found it really beneficial because, as you know, I've been driving all over the country for the past little while. And I was actually put onto this app, which is called Audible.
Yes.
Right. You've heard of it?
I have heard of it. Right. I've heard good things about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's audiobooks is basically what it is.
Yeah.
However, what I think could be beneficial to people out there, hopefully, is think about all the time that you spend in a car. It's quite a bit, whether it's you going from work or to, you know, play some sport, to go visit people, whatever it might be. What I've decided to do with Audible is focus it on my storytelling. So you can basically get a trial membership as a start. And I don't want this to be an advert for Audible because there's plenty of other great programs out there that do this.
Yep.
However, the idea is that why not find some great acting books, why not find some great storytelling books, you know, whatever it might be that interests you to help you in your craft, and just listen to them when you're in the car.
I actually really love that you've said that. I mean, because this is a similar thing. I do a similar thing with podcasts.
Yes.
And I listen to them when I'm in the car.
In the car, right.
And it's always on. I generally listen to podcasts that are about storytelling or the industry or things of that ilk.
Yeah, totally.
And my first recommendation was going to be the off-camera podcast.
Oh, nice.
With Hollywood photographer Sam Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And he interviews a whole heap of great people, and I would really recommend people listen to this podcast. I've listened to an interview with Kevin Bacon and Laura Dern and all these people, but there's a really great one with Zach Braff that I was listening to the other day, and they go all into quite in-depth into the whole crowdfunding blow-up around his film, Wish I Was Here. And
it was huge.
I'm getting off topic a little bit, but I just got really excited because I have come to a similar conclusion with podcasts.
Well, totally. That's the best use of your time in the car. And that's what I loved about Audible too, was this idea that sometimes when I'm reading, it doesn't seem to stick in my head as much as when I actually hear it.
Yeah.
And even though I know that I'm doing something, you know, like driving, and I guess listening's secondary in that sense, I still feel like I pick it up a lot better. So I've done it with a few little books here and there, and I just wonder whether, or I can, you know, challenge the listeners to go, why not give it a shot with a podcast or
with
something
audible,
like it,
yeah,
whatever it is, but just specifically use that as time for your craft. Because I'm a big fan, and I don't want to go on too much about this, but that idea of 10,000 hours, and the more that you can do something, there's so much time we spend in
the
car.
It also takes away that idea of, oh, I'm in the car, I need to get where I'm going to get something done. It's like you can actually achieve, you know, multiple things.
You know, so I think that's my little recommendation. I do have another theatre recommendation really quickly for you, which is a great little show called Duck Hunting, which is happening at the King Theatre in Newtown in Sydney. It has a wonderful lead actor in it called Christian Heath, who we know quite well. But it looks like a great show, and I must admit, even this poster for it looks very HBO. And a great little concept. It's an original interpretation of Alexander Vampilov's work.
He's a Russian writer, and he's been very favorably compared to Chekhov for having a sort of similar insight into humanity, and he passed quite young, I believe.
And this sounds quite interesting. It's about Craig, a 30-something who's lost his will to live, and he thinks, his only hope is his annual duck hunting trip to restore his purpose in life. So very interesting little work there at the King Theatre in Newtown. And that'll be happening from the 4th to the 29th of November this year.
Great. And while we're on recommendations for events, I've got a couple that I would just like to put out to our listeners who are in Melbourne in terms of events that I think it's great to go and support creative things that are happening, but also if you're in the industry to meet like-minded people and have the opportunity to network a bit and talk about creative things. And I think both of these will hit that button. That's not the
right
phrase.
Hit that button. Why not?
Why not? Let's hit the button. One is the Rock Lobster Short Film Festival, which is coming up on October 15th. This is a great little film festival. I particularly like it because it's supporting Australian filmmakers. So a great opportunity to see some films and music videos that have been hand-picked to present a diverse range of talent from the Australian talent pool. It's also hosted by the Actors Theatre Collective to raise funds for their 2016 season. So that's exciting. And they've also got on the website, it's an opportunity to meet fellow creatives, catch some great Australian filmmaking talent and support their theatre company. That's one. The other one is, this is a bit different, a music recommendation.
There's a gig
coming up at the Evelyn on October 22nd, and it's the ETK music launch by an artist called Eris Bell.
Yes, ETK, Experience the Knowing.
Yes, this is the feature film that I was in
last year.
Fantastic,
and they're having a music launch.
Well, it was produced by some musicians, and this is the music.
Fantastic.
I believe they're playing at least some of the music that goes with the film.
Great.
They're pretty awesome musicians, and I'll be there. So come along.
Come along
it'll
and
be
meet
great.
Lauren.
So what are you up to this month, Nick?
So this month, obviously after last month, Lauren, where I was really, I guess, going through a bit of a clearing of the mind, getting the body ready and preparing for my next little six-month stint. And I actually had a great revelation too around this idea of becoming a leader in what I do. Now, okay. Sounds a bit esoterical when I say it like that, right?
But Sounds great. I love it. Tell me more.
Well, it's about the mentality that you use in your day-to-day life. I think sometimes I have a tendency to go and do, which is great, but you have a mindset that you are just a cog in a wheel and you might not have the influence that you possibly could have.
Yeah.
This idea of being a leader for me is really looking at how I inspire both myself and others, how I manage myself in those scenarios, and also how I create new work and the mindset of a leader. If you look at good leaders, they have a really fantastic mindset around being able to inspire and do and create and power forward with projects. I want to just go into this month looking at this mentality of being a leader.
What a great challenge. Like,
yeah.
To accept.
I think it's, I'm still you know, distilling down this idea, but it's a wonderful thought to put in your head at the start of each day.
I'm totally stealing this idea. Is yeah. it a problem if we both become leaders and then we have like leader clash?
Well,
is that a, should we?
Good leaders can work together, okay. right? But this is the thing, right? A lot of people will go, well, with what you're doing with the podcast, there's a sense of leadership in that. However, it's how you approach that in yourself. Do I look at this as a leadership position? How can I better use this as a leadership position to help other people? So looking across the board at my life and going, right, and I feel like I'm about that age, if that age is a thing, where you can make the transition from being the student to the leader in anything.
Yeah.
So I just want to see whether that transition can happen.
Particularly if it's this mind shift of maybe you've said student and leader, maybe a student, how do I learn? How do I grow?
Yep.
And leader is, how do I help myself and help others simultaneously?
Exactly. Because you've still got to grow as a leader. This is the thing. So.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to hearing more. And have you got any concrete plans when you get back to Sydney that you'll be embedding this sense of leadership in?
No, well, it's more around, once again, as I'm always going on about, managing time, ensuring that I'm getting to the classes that I need to be, and then looking for new projects. I do want to mention, though, as a part of it, is a few little projects that I want to finish. There's a script that I have that I'm wanting to finish and share with you, Lauren, and you've inspired me with your film. I want to create a bit of comedy, stand-up. I'm putting it out there because if I do that, it's a sense of accountability, I guess, and this is this leadership idea. We'll see what happens with that. I'm not sure whether I'll actually go, you know what, I'm going to go and perform some comedy, but it's something that I've wanted to try. So, you know, in the essence of being a leader, get out there and do something.
Yeah, and if any of our listeners in Sydney, I guess, have any recommendations for great stand-up or stand-up classes, or would that be useful?
Totally. Reach out. Let's have a chat.
Yay.
All right, Lauren, what about your month? What's ahead?
For the first time, I'm in the realm of post-production on a film, which is very exciting. And so I'm still learning things nearly daily. And I guess I've also got a couple of other writing, creating projects that seem to have appeared in my life.
Fantastic.
Which is really nice.
And writing's such a strong thing in your life, isn't it? Like you really find great passion in writing.
I think particularly over the last year, it's become more and more present in my day-to-day routine.
Yes.
So writing has become something that I definitely want to be more sort of mainstream in my career.
Mm-hmm.
I still identify myself as an actor with a lot of other wonderful things that I've been doing, and writing is now one of them. Yeah, I had a couple of auditions last month and I'm feeling really, really good and present with where I'm at as an actor. Some of the stuff that I found through my training in Bali earlier this year has really sort of settled, and as Fantastic. I was working on the film, sort of become evident in my processes.
It's so lovely when you have these momentous moments in your career, isn't it? Which we will call this a momentous moment in your career. You really can find great motivation from it and really sit within yourself for a period of time as you're looking at other projects.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Something that I've been doing a little bit of journaling, I think something that I realized through making this film and why it's so particularly exciting for me, if anyone's thinking, wow, she's a bit overexcited, is that a lot of the fundamental things that I've recognized about myself as a storyteller previously, but possibly in isolation, I now, you know how we ask people in interviews about their voice as a storyteller or what they believe the key to good storytelling is.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of those things become clearer to me.
Yeah, great.
And that is part of the excitement. It's like, yes, that's who I am and what I'm trying to say and why it's so important and fun and to be working on saying on it and collaborating with amazing people. Yeah.
Ah, fantastic. Yay. Wow, what a note to finish this month on. Really positive, really great month. We're looking forward to October, the rest of October.
We are looking forward, and there is a lot of exciting things happening in the world and on the podcast horizon, and I hope there are amazing things happening for you all out there If you want to share them with us, please do. We love hearing from you guys.
We really do. We really do. And remember, you can find us on the usual channels. That's how you can talk with us. They are the website, www.theactorstorytelling.com.au, about.me,
Twitter,
Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, and iTunes. So continue to join us on The Act of Storytelling.
And thanks for listening. We'll be right back.